everybody. Welcome to the Friday Filibuster. I am Judge David Johnson, joined by Judge Mac McIntyre.
Hi there.
And Judge Eric Ashberslager.
Hello there.
And it's, why'd you put the emphasis on there?
I don't Eric. Know. Something different.
Okay.
I'm trying to shake things up, Dave. I don't want us to get complacent. You
know? That's good. Yeah, we don't want to get in a rut. So, but yeah, just the three of us. Mike Rubino will be joining us at some point. We're pretty sure. I think he's been a busy bee. So if you're worried about if we fired him, don't believe everything you read in the tabloids. So
I may have accidentally fired him. I'm not really
what?
Sure. Well, I was practicing my Donald Trump impression, as you know.
And yes.
I don't think he got the reference.
Did you use the "you're fired" emoticon when you were texting with him or something? Is that what happened?
Is there a "you're fired" emoticon?
I don't know what that would be.
Oh, man. Some intrepid typesmith at home, please come up with it.
That's right,
Donald Trump. If you can figure out which character or number properly conveys the waving of the hair, please.
Here you know how it works. We're gonna kill some time on your Friday before sending you into the weekend. Just, you know, talking about random stuff, and we'll start talking about random stuff right now. Mac McIntyre, what's been happening?
Well, for the last 2 weeks here on the podcast, we've been going back and forth trying to remember what the deal was with the Batman villain Bane.
Yeah, yeah, that's just.
So I went and I did the research.
Nice.
And so I got the story here behind Bane.
All right. Give us the synopsis.
Between the group of us, the things we had heard here and there, we pretty much had it right. Bane grew up in the fictional South American country of Santa Prisca, which I don't know where that is in relation to Parmistan. So we're gonna let's see. When Bane was a child, he has no real name. His name is simply Bane.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, and no last name. And when he was a child, his...
Not Leroy Bane or anything like that?
No, sadly. Not Jerry Bainthouse.
Todd Bane.
when he was a child, his father was in jail, and his father died, and the corrupt judge made him serve out the rest of his father's sentence when he was a child.
Is that legal?
Well, it's a corrupt judge.
Yikes. Santa Prisca's judicial system sounds like it's pretty tough.
Isn't that where the last season of Prison Break ended up?
I think so. That's where the spinoff. That's a rumored Nickelodeon spinoff, the Nick Jr. spinoff.
So he grew up in prison where he learned to fight, and he got all tough. And thanks to the visiting Jesuit priests, he also got a world-class education.
All right.
So he's both super strong, he can fight really good, and he's brilliant, intelligent. Right. Now, things get even worse in prison when the mad scientists show up to experiment on the prisoners, and that's how he got hooked up with the drug called Venom.
Yes, right.
Not to be confused with the Marvel Comics Venom, that's different.
Mm-hmm.
The drug Venom made him super-duper strong, and made him the huge muscle-bound guy that we see in all the drawings. Also in prison, he learned about the existence of Batman, so he breaks out of prison, heads to Gotham City, determined that he's going to be the one to take down Batman. His motivation for this, that's where it gets kind of sketchy for me. He wants to defeat Batman to show everyone that he's better.
So it's like bragging rights, more or less?
Yeah, pretty. That's kind of what I'm getting from it, yeah. So his most famous story was in Nightfall, of course, when he tracked down Batman, broke Batman's back, and this other dude named Azrael became the new Batman.
Now, I actually read that entire storyline. I'm not a comics guy, but I read all of Nightfall. I think it was like packaged, like when it came out, you know, they put in one of those trade paperbacks or whatever.
That's right.
Yeah. So I did read the entirety of Nightfall.
Okay, there you go. That's probably his most famous story.
Right.
And then following that, he got off the drug, and now he's been like an anti-hero, where he's going around, you know, beating up people who manufacture the drug.
Oh,
and
nice.
He and Batman even teamed up to fight some evil drug dealers one time. So,
all right.
He now operates under the name On the Wagon Man.
There you go.
His hidden fortress is in the drug-free school zone.
That's right.
he leaves a sobriety chip on all of his victims.
That's right. Nice. So I'm glad. It sounds like. Sounds like he'd be a great sidekick for MacGyver or something. Yeah. Helping out disadvantaged youth, or as we've established on this podcast, as in all 80s action shows, taking disadvantaged drug-addled youths on camping trips, overnight camping trips. So, all right. So, having done your research and assuming that Nolan will stick to a little bit, at least, of this biography, what do you think of him as a villain in the third film?
I don't know. It'll be interesting. Despite his brilliant intellect, Bane is basically the muscle. And we haven't really seen that in Nolan's Batman films yet. You know, he's always taking on brainy villains. So
that's true.
You know, how's he going to do taking on the muscle? But then again, you know, we've got Tom Hardy. Is that correct? Cast as Bane. Now, he's a big dude, of course, but he's pretty much not South American. So how is the character going to be different from what we know in the comics? That's a big question mark right there.
Any thoughts or theories on who Joseph Gordon-Levitt might be playing? The newest rumored cast member?
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing. Speculation is Robin, but come on.
Robin. Oh, yeah, that's right. I read that rumor.
Yeah, I mean, that seems like a stretch because, I mean, didn't Nolan say there was no Robin or Christian Bale said he's not. Like, he was promised that there's going to be no Robin in these movies. So
yeah, they both
I don't know. This is,
I just don't see that translating.
This is the last Batman movie for Nolan, though. Maybe he's going to throw everything in there. It's going to be a six-hour epic shot entirely in IMAX. It costs $35 per ticket.
Okay.
And it'll sell out every night.
So they get every tiny villain they can think. I mean, wasn't Hugo Strange, again, possible rumor? I mean, that was speculation.
It was going around for a long time. Yeah.
That may be more connected to the Batman game coming out than anything.
Yeah.
All right, well, we'll see. I have to say, I do kind of like the idea of, like, some alpha stud coming on to Gotham and challenging Batman in his own game, you know? We'll see. We'll see what happens.
It'd be kind of like the Kryptonian bad guys in Superman 2 after Superman loses his power.
That's right.
Well, then maybe Batman can pull a big cellophane bat off of his chest and wrap one of them around him.
We can only hope.
All right. Well, thank you for doing that research. Now, have you watched anything of recently that you want to bring up?
Not too much. I've been just crazy busy with work. We had another great episode of Castle the other night, though, so shout out for Castle.
All right.
And if the Castle fans have seen the accompanying music video that's gone viral since the episode aired, it's really funny. If you don't watch the show, you probably won't get the joke, but if you watched the show and saw the episode, it's pretty funny.
All right. How about you, Eric? What's happening?
Oh, Dave, I was actually wondering if you've seen the first episode of The Chicago Code.
You know, we didn't have the yardage of – we didn't have, the acreage available on our DVR. Like, we were taping, Top Gear and a bunch of other stuff. So,
sure.
But I mean, it's got the pedigree because I know, the guy, Sean Ryan did The Shield was behind it. And it's been kind of well-received by critics. So
yeah, I caught the first episode. I forgot it was going to be on. I actually saw it on Hulu. And I really enjoyed it.
Did you? Yeah, I heard it was pretty good. So, I mean, it's not your typical kind of cop procedural, right? It's like –
No, I mean, it comes across – I guess in some ways, yes, in some ways, no. But it definitely comes across as being more – kind of serialized. You kind of get the sense that even in this first episode, there wasn't like a central mystery that they were trying to solve. I guess in a sense, there was a murder that they were kind of getting in on, but it was really just the entryway to this kind of larger story about this female superintendent of the police force, played by Jennifer Beals, and her ex-partner who's still a cop, and her kind of bringing him on to kind of take down the corruption in Chicago.
And Delroy Lindo, isn't he was he the mayor? Is he the mayor or something?
He's an alderman. He's a corrupt alderman. So he's definitely the heavy, the bad guy.
Gotcha.
He does a great job kind of chewing up the scenery. And there's some interesting the way that they tell this at least this first story, there's a bunch of kind of multiple narration where each of the characters sort of provides a little bit of a backstory and just a little bit of character development, kind of character background for themselves throughout the course of the episode. And it's used to great effect near the end of the episode. I won't say how, but I really enjoyed it. It definitely felt more like a cable TV show than a Fox show. So not having seen The Shield, I can't compare to that, but
Yeah, I mean, I've heard I've heard even subsequent episodes are even better. So
mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, it's just
so is something you think you'll tune into long term.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And it was interesting because the whole corruption, kind of a few small people working outside the system to take down this kind of big, powerful corrupt agency, reminded me of another show that I have been watching. also on Hulu because it's been canceled. But this is part of my FX education.
Yeah, oh, yes.
But I've been catching up on the show Terriers.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting. Another show well regarded, but it must have gotten like zero audience though.
Yeah, that's too bad. It definitely and actually, interestingly enough, Sean Ryan was executive producer on that show.
Oh, he's pretty. I mean, because he still does Lie to Me or something, right? Unless that's been canned. I don't know, but yeah, he's pretty busy, I think.
Yeah, but Terriers is pretty fun. I knew it had been canceled. Saw it up on Hulu. They had five episodes, and I thought, okay, well, it only lasted five episodes, but I'll watch those because I heard good things about it. So I watched them, and I thought, well, that was fun. I really enjoyed it. And then just this past week, I saw that there were five more episodes up on Hulu. There apparently was a full 13-episode season. I thought there were only five, so I kind of – I didn't know.
But did they cancel it after five episodes?
No, they canceled it after a full season of 13 episodes. But I thought because they only had the five episodes up on Hulu that was all that they had. So I got this gift of five more episodes, and I guess there are three more they will be bringing out later in the month after when they stop making these available, part of the wonderful world of digital licensing. But it was a good show, good sense of humor. It almost reminds me of sort of if Veronica Mars were for an older audience, and instead of a plucky young heroine, you had an alcoholic ex-cop who, is quirky, who kind of has a lot of quips and looks like a homeless guy. But definitely a good sense of humor, and that's that same kind of underlying storyline of they get involved in this case that ties to this much larger kind of corruption, and they have kind of personal reasons for wanting to take it down.
Is it a comedy or no?
No, I mean, yes and no. I mean, I guess you classify it as a drama.
Okay.
But there's a lot of, quirky characters, people making quips.
Marketing for it seemed like it's almost comedy. I was like,
yeah. And from what I can tell that the biggest problems with the show were in the marketing. I mean, the name makes no sense. I mean, there's nothing. They're not they're not private investigators who also groom dogs. It's like Terriers. It's nothing to do with anything. I don't know where that comes from. But
see that show.
There you go. Let's work on that. But just really kind of a weirdly positioned show that should probably have done well on FX. I'd say, having seen now, I've been watching, starting to watch Justified and Lights Out. And it's not quite as substantial as those shows.
Uh-huh.
It's a little more kind of what you see is what you get. Besides the underlying mysteries that, carry on the season, the characters are who they seem. And so there's not a whole lot of depth there, but it's just, it's good actors and good, good stuff. So, too bad it got canceled, but alas. So anyway, nice. This is August.
So, all right, well, the continuing FX experience. Nice.
I was trying to figure out why did I miss out on all this FX stuff? And then I think I realized that
I think I've talked about The Shield ad nauseum and Justified for sure.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, I think it's because up until, I don't know, let's say within the past year, when I thought of FX original shows, I was thinking like, way back when they first started. So I thought of, to me, FX was the network that had Nip Tuck and Rescue Me and Dirt. Like it was always like, I was like, oh, that's that network that has those like gritty shows of unlikable people and partial nudity. That was kind of my it's like kind of like the gritty, seamy kind of like, wash your hands afterwards type of TV. But They have good stuff. So I do want to catch The Shield at some point. But
and I've been loving Sons of Anarchy in a big way.
Oh, yeah. That's another show that
I'm in season two right now, and I'm just absolutely embracing that. So
yeah, I've really gotten into the idea of TV that just tells a continuing story. I'm much less interested in shows that have like the mystery of the week type thing.
Yeah. And I think a lot of these, I mean, is Castle kind of a one-off show, or are there like season? Is there like a season-long arc, Mac?
For the most part, it's a mystery of the week, but the characters do have arcs that you follow over time.
Yeah,
so it's kind of a little of both. I mean,
I think I'm the same though. I'm like, I have become invested. Like the season-long stuff is what really draws me. Like Fringe to me, we talked about that. The first season of Fringe was Monster of the Week and wasn't as interesting as when they got into like the season long stuff for me, So I think it was really like Angel and Buffy that got me into that really into the season long stuff. You know, Joss Whedon just knows how to do a season long story. So,
I think
the formula was perfected, I thought, with Veronica Mars season one.
Yeah, but then, I mean, then again, that was definitely a show that had the mystery of the week thing. But,
that's true.
But then, you know, I think a lot of the shows.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like these FX shows are primarily that. They are like 13 episode extended stories, you know, although Justified is kind of a one off type of thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that surprised me about the show. We've only watched 4 episodes so far, but each one of those is definitely is a contained story within, you know, within each episode. I know you've said that it kind of picks up the.
It does. It does. Form. Yeah, really get into like the latter half. It really gets into.
Yeah, it's because I mean the first episode really sets up some interesting stuff.
Yeah,
and I've enjoyed it. And you know, Raylan Givens, is that his name?
Yeah,
he's one of the best TV characters I've seen in a long time.
Well, I'm probably write up something for the site. I participated in a TV like a teleconference interview with Timothy Oliphant, and the question I asked him was like. Like, just kind of noted how I think Raylan Givens, exactly what you said, is really, if he's not there, he's getting close to, like, almost TV icon status. And I'm wondering, like, how that translates if he hears from fans and what does he hear from that. So I was going to just kind of incorporate what he said. And I think my theory is he may be, like, the next Jack Bauer type of character, you know?
He's definitely, like, the uber macho.
Right.
Like just he's just charming and badass and just really – You know, I mean, he talks, you listen. I mean, if he was not on the show, you wouldn't have a show. I mean, the show is basically him.
Right.
Yeah, he's just – I think I made one of my recent Facebook posts was that he makes me feel like less of a man.
Yeah, that's true. Hey,
and I love it. So I definitely want to get back to that. And I'm going to record the second season as I go. So once we finish the first, I can jump right in.
Very good. And my prediction is that Boyd Crowder will be your second favorite TV character.
That's good. Yeah,
As he develops, he's gonna they do some really interesting stuff with him. So that's my prediction for your Justified experience.
Very cool.
All right. Well, that's a lot of FX talk, and nothing really I'll build on. I'll just say that yes, as we're recording this, Justified is premiering season 2, so definitely check that out. And I've been watching season 2 of Sons of Anarchy, really enjoying that in a big way. And really, that like nothing. I am looking forward to the Liam Neeson Taken sequel that looks like it's coming out in a couple weeks. Although it's being marketed as a Taken movie, but I very much doubt it's going to be like that.
Yeah, it is the ads. They're like his identity has been taken.
I know. So it's like so that's why I'm skeptical if it's actually going to be like that. So, but you know, I think Liam Neeson is really. Earned his stripes as an action hero. So, but beyond that, not much else. Just and continuing with Lights Out, I think you're a little bit ahead of me, Eric, and I believe you're going to be getting some advanced screeners of the first season. So that's
pretty good.
But
I got the first 11 episodes in the mail today, so I'm pretty excited.
That's good. I just finished the third episode, so because they're staggered on demand, but I've been enjoying that a great deal as well.
Yeah, that was a good episode.
Yes, it was the one where their cocky fighter.
Yeah, very good.
And you kind of see how things are kind of aligning up for the title match, the rematch. You know, I like how they're doing that.
Yeah, there's some stuff in the next episode you haven't seen yet that moves even further in that direction. But I'll let you discover that for yourself.
Hey, fantastic! All right, moving on. Stuff we're working on for the site, Mac.
Yeah. So you guys remember that sci-fi movie from the 70s? I think it was the 70s, Westworld.
Yeah, Michael Crichton, wasn't it?
That's right. Michael Crichton wrote and I think directed, and Yul Brynner played a Terminator-like robot cowboy, ran amok in the futuristic amusement park. Well, I'm not reviewing that. I'm All reviewing right. the sequel.
Oh, great.
Future World.
I didn't know there was a sequel.
Yes, the sequel. So it's years later. The theme park, which is actually not called Westworld, it's called Delos. It reopens, and... we've got our hero, it's his Peter Fonda, doing his confident swagger that he does so well, uncovers a conspiracy at Delos. And, of course, this time we not only have robots that look just like people, but also killer holograms that look just like people.
Are killer holograms actually lethal? Are they corporeal, for one thing, I guess?
Well, they take the form of, old-timey Japanese samurai, and the samurai try to, kill him.
Gotcha.
He picks up a big metal rod and he uses it as his sword to fight against the samurai. So.
right. And overall, a rewarding experience?
It's a different experience. You could never make this movie today simply because it's predicting a future that never came to pass.
Oh, yeah. So it's like the Predator 2 that takes place in 1997.
Right. there's all this talk about, you know, role-playing and immersion. Oh, come to this futuristic theme park where you can role-play as all these different characters. And I'm like, well, these days, you know, we're living in the age of online gaming and stuff where people are just doing that in their homes.
You know, but between Westworld, Future World, and Jurassic Park, I wonder how close we're getting to the amusement park that kills people.
I don't know.
I think it seems like an inevitability.
I have read a book about a killer amusement park. So, you know.
Nonfiction?
Yes, nonfiction. Epcot murder. Nice. All right. Eric, what do you got?
I am reviewing the third season of Twilight Zone on Blu-ray, which hits next week, this coming week. And it's probably, I think fans would probably consider it to be the last of the really great seasons. Season 4 was the season of hour-long episodes, and by season 5 they kind of really ran out of steam, although there are some great episodes. But season 3 is kind of a return to form. Season 2 was shorter, like 28 episodes, but season 3 is the longest. There's 37 episodes. Some of the one of the most iconic episodes. I'd say it's the season that has the most episodes that eventually became segments on the Simpsons Halloween specials. it's got It's a Good Life, the one about the telekinetic boy that terrorizes the town, and To Serve Man, which is probably one of the most kind of gut punch twists at the end about the aliens who come down to Earth and offer humanity all these great advancements and world peace and all this stuff, and then they find out that it's tough to know in Twilight Zone how much I should like spoil, because I don't want to, like, if you haven't seen it, I don't want to be like, it's this episode where this happens.
Yeah, right.
But you guys know what I'm talking about.
Oh, Mac.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that's a classic.
And actually, it's also got an episode. You remember the Simpsons Treehouse of Horror with Homer, I guess it's Homer Cubed. I don't know. The one where he went through the interdimensional portal behind the cabinet, and he's in 3D.
Yeah, they used the CGI. That was
That is a Simpsons episode I actually saw, and it ends with him. Is that where he ends up going in the real world?
Yeah, yes. he goes
to the erotic cake.
Yeah. Yes. this Twilight Zone doesn't go quite that direction. But there's an episode called Little Girl Lost that I've never seen before, but is basically that plot. The parents wake up in the night to hear their daughter calling them, and they go in the room and she's gone. They find out that she's actually, that the wall in her room is actually has become this portal between dimensions. And so they, of course, immediately think to invite their physicist friend over, and he determines where the portal is, and he draws a shape on the wall that I think Frink draws on the wall in The Simpsons. Oh. So it was pretty cool. Actually, a very effective episode, kind of surprisingly creepy for even for the Twilight Zone. But it's a very solid season. Blu-ray stuff is still great, and it's if you come this far, I'd say keep going. But it's a great show.
Very good. I'll just bring up one movie here. I've been on a Shaw Brothers kick recently, getting a lot of the old Shaw Brothers movies, and this one is called The Lady Hermit, and it's kind of an interesting. On one hand, it's a martial arts film with two women who are the prime protagonists. One is the aforementioned Lady Hermit, and she's like an expert swordsman or swords person, I suppose. And then there's her student, and so that's one thing. Yeah, strong female characters kicking all kinds of butt. Great, you know. But then there's this goofy subplot where there's a love triangle where they're fighting over another male student or something, and it becomes almost like a catty catfight stereotypical Saved by the Bell love triangle or something. So it's this weird juxtaposition of like, wow, kick-ass woman with swords just taking it to the man, and then Jesse Spano lamenting over Slater. You know, I mean, what happened? So a little weird, but these Shaw Brothers movies, you never know what you're going to get. And they fight someone called the Black Knight, not the Monty Python Black Knight. He's not really wearing any night clothes. He's just a regular guy with long fingernails, and that's how he kills long, like, Lee press-on nails. So, again, you really never know what you get with these Shaw Brothers movies. But there's, like, thousands of them, so it's always going to be a surprise in store. And it's got, like, the single worst use of there's actually a rope bridge sequence very similar to the Temple of Doom, and I'm not sure when this came out. Actually, it came out in 1971, well before Indiana Jones. But you know, the whole thing—they're all clinging to the fallen rope bridge and stomping on each other's hands, and you know, trying to get them to fall off. And once one of the bad guys falls off, it cuts to a miniature set and an obvious action figure falling. Not even like a dummy, but an action figure. Just—it's terrible. But it's not like my suspension was my disbelief was suspended much anyway. So. But that'll be coming out soon. So anyway, Mac, why don't we move on?
Sure. Let's take a look at what's coming out next week on DVD and Blu-ray. We're going to go to DVDverdict.com, click on the upcoming DVD releases tab, and from there we're going to go to the cover art gallery for February 15th. And we're just going to talk about what we see on the list here and what jumps out at us as interesting.
Now, isn't this, Mac, didn't you review Death Tube, the first Death Tube, or am I getting that confused with another movie?
Yes, I did, and I can't believe they made a Death Tube 2.
Yeah.
Death Tube, what can I say? It's like Saw, but kind of not as much. It's a lesser Saw.
Lesser Saw.
I'm just not sure why they didn't do Death and then the number 2 BE.
That's right. You know what I mean? This is that type of franchise where you can get away with something like
that. If Scream could do it with Scream 4, they can do it with Death Tube 2.
Yeah, so yeah, the first Death Tube, people trapped in a room, evil faceless villain makes them play a bunch of, you know, sick, twisted games, and one by one they all are tortured and killed.
Right.
And after the movie was over, I sat back and thought to myself, oh, that was pointless. And now here comes Death Tube 2, so who knows, maybe it'll be brilliant, but I have my doubts.
There's right nearby Death Tube 2 is like a celebrity workout video with Andrew Bynum, who's the 7-foot center for the Los Angeles Lakers. And it's just odd that he has a workout video because he's infamous for being constantly injured. He's constantly injured. So I'm not sure you really want to follow what he has to say, FYI to everybody.
Maybe it's just a candid video of his physical therapy session.
Maybe that's what it is. A candid video of his physical therapy, yes. Because I can't think of anyone wanting to take advice from someone. So, well, there's a Lady Hermit.
Oh, nice.
Right.
Yeah.
Doctor Who's The Christmas Carol, the one that was out last December, got rave reviews. It's coming out on DVD and Blu-ray.
Is it? I didn't realize it was actually called A Christmas Carol. Is it Doctor Who doing a version of A Christmas Carol?
You know, I still haven't seen it, so I think it's some sort of riff on it, but I don't know how much of a riff it is. I actually haven't seen it yet, so I don't know, but I'm looking forward to it.
The Ghost of Christmas Future ends up being a Dalek, something like that?
That would be awesome.
It's a terrible movie, yeah, another National Lampoon movie, which have ceased being funny, but dirty movie. And all it is like an hour and a half of jokes. That's what it is. There's a loose narrative about like this guy wants to make a movie where they just act out jokes or something. So there's like some half-assed meta going on. But really, there's just 90 minutes of just telling jokes.
Are they good jokes?
I don't know. Stuff you probably heard in middle school.
So you say people telling jokes,
yeah.
you mean like, why did the gorilla eat the banana stand?
You're not far off. You're not far off at all. And they're not like, it's not like just stand up, though there's a couple of, like, there's some people just tell, like they set up little skit type of things, you know, like a doctor talking to a patient, but they just exchange an old joke. It's terrible.
Does the title make any sense, or is it just like crude marketing?
Yeah, it's typical National Lampoons where they're trying to push, this is, you know, sexy and whatnot. But, I mean, it's just so dumb. So dumb.
But really, it's about as sexy as how do you make a tissue dance?
It's about as sexy as Paddington Bear right underneath.
Yeah. I don't know, Dave.
Although, I guess if you think about it, Paddington Bear is an inadvertent sleazy sounding DVD release.
Well, don't take them all day. There's precious few this
week. There are precious few. Let's see, what else?
There's Twilight Zone for you.
Yep, there it is.
And we got that documentary, Waiting for Superman.
That's right.
About Superman. Sadly,
yeah, but a very well-regarded documentary that wasn't nominated. I guess there was a little kerfuffle about that, but I mean, I remember hearing a lot of good things about it. Is that the official release of Unstoppable, the Denzel Washington movie? It kind of looks a little shifty. I'm not sure.
That was quick.
The Runaway Train movie, you know?
Yeah.
It might be one of those instances where the movie poster is still in the Amazon database.
Yeah. That's probably it.
Yeah. I listen to the show even when I'm not on.
That's good.
I notice that the show tends to be about half as long when I'm not on, but sure, that's unrelated.
The new Wesley Snipes movie, Game of Death, which actually I have to review. I haven't watched it yet, but.
Yeah. So quick question.
Yeah.
I see there you have the Rich Little Show.
Uh-huh.
Can anyone here stomach impressionists?
That's a great question. Now, the guy on Fox, and he's kind of shticky now, Frank Caliendo. You know?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
I've heard him on the radio, and he was hilarious. But that's the best I can do for you.
Yeah. I mean, I guess you have to bring something other than, hey, that guy sounds just like that guy.
You know, actually, I would argue that an impressionist works primarily on, like, the radio format. You know, he obviously doesn't look like he's trying really hard to do the impression.
I mean, yeah, I guess if you are, if you're someone playing a character that is supposed to be someone else, and then you make your own funny around that, then that's fine.
Right. It depends on the material. Just the voice alone won't sell it. You got to have good material to go with it.
I can't remember the name of the. I'm blanking on the name of the stand-up comic, but there's a podcast called Comedy Death Ray, where it's a radio show basically, and they bring out a lot of comics, and some of them will do characters that are based on people. And there's one comedian who does Ice Cube as a character, and it's very funny. But he's not just like, hey, I sound like Ice Cube. He's doing jokes and stuff.
Right, yeah. On one of the Futurama commentaries, John DiMaggio starts doing Tracy Morgan, and it's really hilarious.
Yeah, audio, you know, the audio. I think that's the impressionist's best friend, audio.
Yeah, that's true. Huh?
Yeah. I've been pretending to be Mike Rubino for about, you know, 6 months now. And frankly, I'm just tired of it, which is why he hasn't been on the show.
Nice. And the truth finally comes out.
Tired of living a lie, Dave.
That's good. All right. Well, so just inadvertently sleazy sounding DVD release of the week. Mac.
How about The Man Behind WikiLeaks?
All right. Eric.
Secret to a Happy Ending.
Yeah, very good. Yes, that was I'm going to go with A Man Within.
There you go.
Also on my list. Also on my list, Wishbone.
Yeah. That's good. I'll go with Let's Eat.
Well, that's good, too.
The Wiggles.
Especially since it's a Wiggles.
That's true.
In fact, you might as well throw Wiggles in there. Wiggles, Let's Eat. I think ups the ante even more.
I see. He-Man. What's this He-Man? What's going on here? Another He-Man release.
The cycle is beginning, Dave.
Again, yeah, the cycle. It's those Milk Creek guys. They've bought up all the...
all the BCI.
All these licensing, yeah. So they're just kind of like the Cop, you know, Cops. I reviewed that years ago. Remember Cops?
Yeah.
And but it's being re-released, so. All right, let's go to our ambush topics. Just random topics we'll throw out at each other. I'll start. Since you brought up the Christmas Carol, just a personal, you know, favorite, whether they're legitimately good or you just like laughing at them, special Christmas episodes in a TV show.
In February, we're doing Christmas episodes.
We are, because you brought up Christmas Carol. I had nothing at that point. We are doing that.
Well, let's see. I mean, this is do Christmas specials count? Or is it episodes of shows that are Christmas related?
I'll go whatever. If you got nothing from a TV show.
I don't know.
Well, I'm surprised Elf didn't have a Christmas special that you could draw upon.
He probably did. They all blend together. I'll be all right. I'm gonna think for just a minute. I'm sure Mac has one. So
okay. Yeah. Boy, it's one of those things. There's so many out there. It's how do you one jump to mind. There's one that I've been looking for. I've been trying to find, but I've never been able to find it like on a bootleg or anything. But just the title of it cracks me up. Someone once made a TV special called The Shanty Where Santa Claus Lives. That's a real TV special.
Excellent.
And so for years I've been trying to find a copy of that just so I can see what this shanty looks like.
Well, maybe you should check like Dateline to Catch a Predator. It sounds like one of their episode titles.
I don't know.
What was your original one? What were you originally thinking of?
Well, I was, I don't know, I seem so dumb now. the Christmas toy.
The what?
The Christmas toy, the Jim Henson one.
Yeah, that's great.
I basically did Toy Story before Toy Story.
Oh, I don't recall that. Refresh my memory.
Oh, it was a Christmas special where, what, Rusty the Tiger? No. Anyway, there was a tiger. Basically, the idea is that when all the humans leave the toy room, all the toys come to life. And every year at Christmas time, they get ready to welcome the new toys in. It's getting on toward Christmas. But the big toy from the previous Christmas is a tiger. I think his name is Rusty, but I could be wrong. He's still stuck on the idea that he is the most important toy because he was the favorite toy last Christmas. He hasn't gotten through Christmas yet, and so he concocts a plan to go and put himself back under the tree so he can re-experience the magic. But the thing about the special is that it introduces this whole weird, dark element where the rule is that if a human catches a toy outside of the playroom, the toy is frozen forever. Basically, toys can die in this world.
Yes.
So you think Toy Story 3 did it first? You're wrong. So there's this whole thing, and there's actually like a clown toy that gets caught outside the playroom and falls down. Falls
down. Nightmarish clown toy.
Ones. Aren't they all? But actually, they revive at the end, so they kind of wuss out. But there's some good music in that. Kermit introduces the episode, but besides that, there aren't any main Muppet characters in it, but it was good stuff. I think it may even have been part of the Jim Henson Hour, but I don't know. All this Christmas stuff, it just blends together, Dave.
That's true. You're right. And I guess it's just a simple excuse for me to bring up once again the fantastic Saved by the Bell Christmas special. One of my favorites, where Zach just cannot stay away from lusting after nor hitting on the homeless girl. it's great. And they when Zach and Screech and Slater, maybe, I don't know, they stumble upon the homeless man in the bathroom as he cleans up. It's like it's just shocking to them. I think he's homeless. They're just kind of staring at him and all like he's the Ark of the Covenant or something. And they leave some money in the payphone, which is in the bathroom. Now that I think about it, isn't that a little odd? Do they have payphones in bathrooms? But anyway, they cram like 10 bucks in the payphone, and the homeless man is really stunned by that. And it ends with the Morris family taking in the man and the daughter into their house, and that's the last we ever see of them. So who knows? maybe they're shoved under a crawl space somewhere in Zach Morris household.
I'm pretty sure that was the implication. Yeah,
I think so. It was a two-parter too, so it was an epic one. Very good. All right, Eric, what do you have?
How did I word this? Impressive special effects in not so great movies.
It's a good topic. Let's see here.
And if anybody takes mine, I'm kind of screwed. I don't know if I have a backup.
Okay.
Well, I got one, but it's from like the pre-CGI days.
That's fine.
It's a movie with just huge special effects, and the end of the movie has this great stop-motion animation monster that's a really, really cool monster. And if you like the stop-motion animation like I do, it's a really amazing sight to behold this giant monster. And of course, it's defeated with this huge laser beam, and there's this huge explosion, and it's all really cool and exciting. Unfortunately, the movie is Howard the Duck.
All right. That was a visual extravaganza.
Yes.
I wonder if they'd ever remake Howard the Duck and CGI the duck,
That would break my heart.
That would,
And the CGI Leah Thompson as well.
They would deny you the fake duck breasts as well.
Yeah, you can't do that anymore.
I would have said Independence Day, but when you look at the effects now, they're pretty bad. Like just looking at Independence Day, the effects aren't great. The miniatures blowing up is kind of cool. But the ships flying around, it's really not fun.
I seem to remember the jets making some twists and turns that I don't...
Yeah, right. None of that. I really have come to loathe that movie, but that was not very good at all. What had great, great visual effects, I thought, but was just an unbearable movie, was Pearl Harbor. Unbearable. But like the actual Pearl Harbor attack, which is so much CGI, it was cool. It was good. It was bombastic and eye candy and whatever, but too bad the romances didn't have the level of authenticity as the sinking battleships did.
Yeah. It's kind of sad how everybody just fast forwards to the big pyrotechnics in the middle of the movie.
I know. But the other thing, it's sad that, let me get to the massacre of the U.S. naval forces. Can't wait to get there.
I think it's called Titanic Syndrome.
Ah, there you go.
Let's sink the boat. Can we just sink the boat, please?
Yes.
Please, kill the people, please.
So, no, that's an excellent example. Is that going to be yours?
No.
That's a good one.
Yeah, that is a good one. And that's a terrible movie. No, mine, actually, movie I saw for the first time some, I don't know, 20 years too late, Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey.
Oh, nice. I'm going to take issue with you. I love that movie, dear.
Yeah, not that good. I'm gonna say, yeah.
Really?
Okay. I mean, maybe it's because I just saw it now.
I guess it could affect it.
There are some interesting sequences, but mostly it's just sort of, it's an idea that's kind of good, but it just goes on way too long. I mean, it's, you know, robots kill Bill and Ted, and then they have to, like, eventually make their way back to Earth after, you know, going through
hell. You are playing with fire here, because Bogus Journey, well regarded along, I believe, Mac, is it not?
It is, yeah. You know, most folks will agree that the first one's better, but a lot of the fans really like the fact that they did something different
for
the second, that instead of more time travel, they did the whole afterlife thing. And so it was something, you know, different and quirky, and it's had some good moments, yeah.
That's fair. I mean, I guess if you're part of the Bill and Ted fan community, you don't have a lot to work with, really. The cartoon. So it was on Hulu.
Wow,
I thought it's not there. I mean, yeah. Anyway, it wasn't a terrible movie, but it definitely felt dated now, and it just sort of seemed like there was some slow parts. I don't know. Can I say that? I mean, I didn't think it was a great movie.
Yeah, it's fine. You're okay.
But,
be confident.
But it did have some pretty cool special effects. I mean, like when the robots pull the faces back to show their robots, it didn't look like they suddenly like switched over to, you know, some rubber mask. It actually looked realistic. But the thing that struck me most was that that alien station, the brilliant scientist alien, actually kind of a cool and convincing special effect for what seemed like not a.
There you go.
A crazy movie, so and the representation of hell was kind of interesting, and the giant, you know, floating rock island connected by chains to the devil's throne and stuff like that. But I'm going to talk myself into liking this movie.
There
the more
go.
I discuss what's happening.
Interesting. It does have quite the following amongst the film geek community, I believe.
Really, I don't know.
It really is. Yeah.
Maybe the shine of Bill and or Ted has just worn off on me. Maybe it's just
that's right. I mean, it's freaking old. It's
yeah, it's
very old.
Yeah.
20 years old. 20 years ago, Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey was made. So.
Yeah. So I think that might just be part of it. You know, I think there are movies have statutes of limitations when, you know, and yep. I think I'm outside the statute of limitations on Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey.
I watched that movie 20 years ago, too. So, that's funny. All right. Very good. Mac, finish it off.
All right. Well, I've had a really long, difficult day. It's just been a brutal day. So we're just going to go back to one of our favorite ambush topics here.
The Force and its wisdom are all around us.
Oh, I was hoping.
Yes, nice. No question. Sense the Force in my left hand. Press it and answer you, I will.
Will Eric ever come to like Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey?
Question.
All right. Well, first of all, we got Yoda here. We ask him a yes or no question. And so that's our first question here. All right. Ready?
Yes, I feel this will be.
There you go.
Oh,
you can't deny your destiny.
Embrace your destiny.
All right.
Question. Will Fringe make it to another season?
Oh, good question.
For Dave.
Yes, thank you. Come on, Yoda. Bring home the bacon.
The answer you seek is yes.
Nice.
Oh, good. Go for it.
Will the Arrested Development movie ever get made?
The answer you seek is yes.
All right, we're on a roll.
He's super agreeable today.
Yes.
Okay. Let's go. Cool. Let's keep on with the. Let's confirm some more rumors. will Robin appear in The Dark Knight Rises?
Nice.
Disturbing. This question. Meditate on this. I will.
It is disturbing. Well played, Yoda.
Nice.
Okay, another rumor I just heard pop up. Will Arnett take over for Steve Carell in The Office?
Oh.
Difficult question you ask. Answer not clear.
That's a cop-out answer.
But I hadn't heard that. That would be kind of cool.
I think Ricky Gervais actually said that he'd like on board.
I'd like that.
Let's see. Well, how about Anne Hathaway? Will Anne Hathaway make a good Catwoman?
Yes, I feel this will be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yoda's got a horn dog, so.
Yeah, Yoda's got an erection as he was. okay, how about this here? Will the new Liam Neeson movie be an action movie like Taken?
No, I feel this will be.
I agree with you, Yoda. I agree with you. I think it's sold. Sold something.
Will the upcoming slate of comic book movies run out of steam after this round?
To infinity and beyond.
Yes, that is accurate.
Yeah, that's true. They're gonna keep milking it. That's true.
And actually, speaking of those various Super Bowl spots that popped out, I would say Captain America did pique my interest. Thor, not so much, but Captain America, I might be down with.
Yeah, it could be cool. Yeah, I've been hearing that a lot, and it was kind of a cool trailer. I think I'm sort of over comic book movies at the moment, but I'm waiting for someone to bring me back in.
There you go.
Excited again.
There we go. One more question for Yoda. All right. Will the DVD verdict site redesign happen within the next 10 years?
Concentrate. Feel the force flow. There, the answer you will find.
Jeez.
There you go.
That's probably about as accurate an answer as you can hope for.
It's like a Bill Belichick press conference. All right. Well, thank you, Yoda. We're glad you're aboard. You're always a soothing balm to whatever it is that bewitches us. Balm? So balm, yeah, balm. You know, the balm.
There's a balm in Gilead.
Oh, balm with
yes, balm.
Of the lip variety, not the nuclear variety.
The bag variety.
Lost me for a minute there.
All right. So that's it for this edition of Friday Filibuster. Thanks for hanging with us, Eric Mack. Thank you. Friday Filibuster at dvdverdict.com is our email address. Facebook.com/FridayFilibuster is our Facebook address. With that being said, Mac, take it away.
We just Melvin'd death.